or learning the language. Come early at 12 noon to catch our feature seminar on scholarships. For more information, check online at www.studyandgoabroad.com.
Tonight, we take pleasure in bringing you Suspense, a weekly anthology of notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense. Located in the hinterlands between France and Spain exists the home of the Basque people. Long believed to be the world's only direct descendants of Cro-Magnon man, the Basque are a fiercely independent seafaring folk who traveled to the four corners of the globe. With them, they took their singularly unique language and customs that were old when the Roman Empire was in its ascendancy. Among these customs is a belief encapsulated in the folk saying, "That which has a name exists." The Basque feel that by attaching a name to a place or a thing, it gains a life of its own. The belief applies to anything from a family home to the figures from their rich mythology, including the Christmas spirit Olencero and other darker creatures.
My friends, a toast to Representative Andrew J. Volstead, who made me the man I am today.
And what a man Volstead made.
You got that right, doll. 8 years ago, I didn't have two pennies to rub together. Now, I'm living it up with the swells of Beacon Hill. I hope Prohibition runs another 8 years. If it does, I'll have every inch of Beantown bought and sold.
Sounds like a peach of a future, Nathan. I hope I'm around to see it.
Play your cards right, darling, and you will be.
Oh! Want to dance, Nathan?
Nah, but I'd like to watch you, Maggie. You got all the right equipment for the Charleston, so go get hot, doll.
Oh, you.
Mr. Wallace.
O'Donnell, what are you doing here?
Sorry to intrude, Mr. Wallace, but I got some news for you gotta hear.
Something that couldn't wait until tomorrow? Maybe you didn't notice, but I'm having a party, and you don't exactly blend in with such tony company.
I wouldn't have stopped by, Mr. Wallace, but it's something big. Real big. Only we might want to talk somewhere more private.
Big, huh? Okay, this way. So what is it?
Mr. Wallace, there's this Spaniard who's into us for 2 G's. A long-standing debt of his father's that we ain't gonna wait on any longer. Only, he ain't got it.
And you don't know what to do. This better not be your big news that couldn't wait, O'Donnell.
That's not it, boss. It's not that he owes us and doesn't have it. It's what he's willing to give us instead. Something worth way more than 2 G's.
What? Some family heirloom he claims is worth a fortune? A flivver that wouldn't make it to the end of the block? The deed to some Hockomock swampland?
No, sir. Information.
Information?
Of the finest kind. The Spaniard claims to know a series of secret tunnels running from the harbor district all the way under the north end to Back Bay.
And he's serious?
Dead serious.
He'd better be. Or else dead is exactly what he'll end up. Okay, set up a meeting, O'Donnell. I want to see these tunnels for myself. And I want to see them tonight.
Tonight? You sure, boss?
You listen, and listen close. The Italians in the north have been using their hold on the harbor area to muscle in our operation. But if these tunnels really exist, we can run bootleg liquor right under their noses 24 hours a day. They'll be out of business within a month. And what's Esposito gonna pay his goons with after he's broke? No, Donnell, I've been waiting for this opportunity to bury the Italians for 3 years now. And now that I have the means to bury them, I'm not gonna wait another day to get started shoveling. You got me?
Got it, Mr. Wallace. Aspinwall, 56403. Doyle, it's O'Donnell. Mr. Wallace and I want to go for a little drive. 1 hour, North End. Nice and quiet. Just you, me, Mr. Wallace, and a couple of torpedoes. Good. Oh, and round up some electric torches. I'll go set things up with the Spaniard.
Okay, meet you downstairs.
Everything okay, Nathan?
Maggie, I gotta go out. You keep playing the happy hostess while I'm gone. Keep the booze flowing, and they won't even notice I left.
What's going on?
Something's up.
Something big?
Big enough that I might own this city a whole lot sooner than I expected.
Nathan, what is...
Maggie.
Okay, okay. Just be careful, lover. Come back in one piece.
You should know by now, Maggie. It's anyone who crosses me that's got to worry about staying in one piece.
I know. Still, just the same.
Look, I got to go see a man about a dog. Goodbye, Maggie. We're right in the heart of Carmine Esposito's territory. So look sharp.
Relax, Mr. Wallace. Sean and I got Thompsons, Mick the trench gun, and all of us are packing 45s. Between us, we don't lack for heat.
O'Donnell, you sure this Spaniard's on the level?
Yeah, boss. He's screwy for sure. Always going on about joining his ancestors. But he knows better than to futz with us.
Yeah, well, he better.
This is the place, Mr. Wallace. Corner of henchmen and charter.
Mick, Sean, take a look around. Make sure this place is clean.
Right, Mr. Wallace.
Doyle, you stay with the caddy, just in case we need to take it on the lam. Or in case we need to take this Spaniard for a little ride.
Got it. O'Donnell, you want to take my Tommy gun just in case?
Aye. Thanks, Doyle.
It's clean, boss. None of Esposito's boys waiting to jump us.
Good. So where's our Spaniard? I ain't got all night.
He'll be here any minute, Mr. Wallace. He was at a speakeasy a couple of blocks over when I got hold of him. Well, that's him, Mr. Wallace. The Spaniard.
Good evening.
My name is Aguirre, gentlemen, and I beg your pardon, but I am not Spanish. My ancestors came from Navarre, in the lands of the Basque people.
Spanish, Basque, what's the difference?
Far greater than that between your people and the hated English, I believe.
What are you, a wise guy?
Not at all. I am but a simple whaler, as the members of my family have been since long before any European walked these lands.
Whaler? What are you, a goof? There hasn't been a whaling ship out of Boston since you were in short pants.
Quite true. But I am a whaler because my family have always been whalers. Even after the ship stopped sailing and we had to take whatever dock work we could find, no matter how menial or low-paying. It is why my father ended up in debt to you. Even with both of us working, we could never do more than pay on the interest that he owed. Then your men began making threats. My father was a proud man, and the shame was more than he could bear. So he took his own life. I will soon join him.
And you're welcome to do so, but not before you give us certain information that will square your debt.
Of course not, Mr. Wallace. I will show you just what I have promised, and will thereby settle our account. Shall we?
Lead the way, Mr. Basque. And no funny stuff.
I assure you, Mr. Wallace, that there will be nothing funny about this night.
So where are we heading?
To nearby Copp's Hill, where the nearest tunnel entrance is located.
Copp's Hill? You mean the old town cemetery?
Yes.
So these tunnels you told O'Donnell about, how many are there?
Dozens, perhaps more. They crisscross what used to be Old Town Boston, from the harbor to the very edge of the back bay. There are entrances hidden deep under many homes built before the 19th century.
But why? And by who?
Some say smugglers, from the earliest days of the Massachusetts colony. Or perhaps abolitionists helping runaway slaves flee the South.
You don't sound too convinced.
Mr. Wallace, almost every entrance is bricked very tightly shut. Only a few long-forgotten ones, such as that at Copp's Hill, remain at all accessible. Such diligence would seem to imply a reason beyond smugglers or runaway slaves.
Such as?
There are tales of ghouls and other monstrous creatures lurking in darkness beneath this city. Creatures that, by night, venture forth to prey upon the dead and upon the living who are foolish enough to enter their domain.
Ha! Huh. What a load of bourgeois.
Yes. Of course it is. Nothing but old wives' tales. But you did ask, after all.
Still, you can't blame folks for believing those stories. Just look at this place.
Yeah, I half expect to see spooks behind every tombstone.
Hey, you two want to put a sock in it?
Sorry, Mr. Wallace.
Behind that stone door is the entrance we seek.
But that's a crypt!
No, it is but a facade. Inside, there is a long stairway leading deep into the bowels of the earth.
Okay, boys. Open it.
We're on it, Mr. Wallace.
Hey, what is that?
What is what?
On the door. Looked like something written there. I could see it in the moonlight for a second. Didn't look like English, though.
Oh, that. No, it is not English. It is Basque. A name.
Whew, what a stench!
This door has not been opened in more than a century. That is, until now.
It smells like something died.
What did you expect, Dum-Dum? A rose garden? Think about where we are.
I know, boss, but it's not that sort of dead. It smells too new.
Lights. All right, let's go.
Thank you.
Mick, you lead the way. Sean, you cover our backs.
Got you, boss.
This staircase, it's almost impossibly deep.
Yeah, we must be nearly 100 feet underground already.
These stairs weren't made by some monster.
No, they were carved by man. By those who serve the dark things that dwell beneath the surface.
Well, I gotta tell you, this is one swell joint you got here, Mr. Basque. Wouldn't even make a good home for a self-respecting rat.
You will find no rats here, Mr. Wallace.
No rats? The sewers are thick with them. Why not here?
You would not believe me if I were to simply tell you.
Yeah, well, try me.
All will become clear soon enough, Mr. Wallace.
So how did you come upon this information in the first place?
My family has lived in Boston for more than 200 years, Mr. Wallace. We have learned many things.
Yeah? No kidding. Maybe you've got some other tips like this one you want to share with me.
I fear not. I will not be sharing anything with anyone else once my debt to you has been paid.
Good. Because I'd hate to think you were telling anyone else about this. Like the Italians, for example. If I thought that was happening, it would be bad for your health. Real bad. You speak my language?
I understand your meaning, Mr. Wallace.
Aguirre, you said that was a name I saw written on the door.
Yes, a name. I wrote it there myself, not long after we first spoke, Mr. O'Donnell.
Hey, fellas, watch your step back there. There's bones underfoot.
Gotcha, Mick. A name? Name of what?
Something from the distant past of my people. Gueco.
Gueco? What's a Gueco?
A fearsome beast of legend that dwells in dark places, all shadow and fangs and claws. Its very name means of the night.
The tunnel splits here. Three different directions. Which way?
We should continue straight.
Continue straight? So, why would you write that on the door?
As a reminder of things that were and may yet still be.
Gueco, huh? We have something like that back home in the Emerald Isle, too.
Yeah, the Pooka. A big hairy beastie he is. He steals folks away on his back and takes them for frightening rides through the night sky before returning them to the earth.
That may be, gentlemen, but the Gueco is said to do far worse to a man than take him for a ride. And the belief in the Gueco far predates that of your Pooka.
Predates the Pooka? Why, his legends were old when the first missionaries arrived in Ireland.
There is an old saying. When God created the first man, he got the bones from a Basque graveyard. Mr. Wallace, we are a very old people.
More bones underfoot here. Lots of them, so be careful.
Gotcha. You hear that, Sean? Sean?
Hey, there's something funny about these bones.
Sean, you back there?
What the hell? These bones have been gnawed on.
Sean! Sean!
And not by rats, neither. By something big.
Aguirre, this is some kind of trick?
A trick?
Yeah, a trick. Like maybe you tipped off the Italians about our little midnight visit. And they're hiding in wait for us down here, looking to give us the business in private.
I can safely say that the four of us are the only living persons down here.
Oh, so it's just the four of us down here, is it? We'll see about that. Wait. You said the four of us. You mean five. You, me, Mr. Wallace, Mick, and Sean.
No. I mean four.
What's that supposed to mean? Well?
Look, maybe Sean made a wrong turn at the junction. We should go back and find him. And maybe Sean didn't make a wrong turn. If this is a double cross, first thing we do is ice Aguirre. We were going to do that anyway after he gave up the info. But we might have to do it sooner than expected.
Right, boss.
Mick, we're going back to look for Sean. You take the lead again, and keep your eyes peeled.
Right.
You must think you're pretty clever, Mr. Basque.
Why do you say that?
Getting us down here in these tunnels. Sean disappearing without a sound. This whole spook show bit about the Gueco.
Ah, so you do agree with Mr. O'Donnell?
Maybe. Maybe not. But either way, something fishy is going on.
If I am so clever, Mr. Wallace, then why am I down here with you? After all, if it is a trick, then the first thing you will do is kill me.
Because you knew we wouldn't come here without you.
That is true. And I very much needed you to come here.
So you admit it, that you're working for Esposito and this whole Gueco business is a load of malarkey.
That's not what I mean at all.
Then what?
Saints preserve us!
What the hell was that?
Something just reached out of the darkness and took Mick, plucked him up like a rag doll and pulled him into that side tunnel.
Mick! Mick!
Mick! We have to do something. I'm going after him.
No! O'Donnell! Think, man, think! Mick's dead already, so we either stick together or else we'll be joining him.
Right. Right, Mr. Wallace.
Aizina duyen guzia omenda.
What? What did you say?
In English, it would be, that which has a name exists.
What's that supposed to mean?
Just what it says. If something has a name, it exists. Like the Gueco.
What? You're telling me that's some Basque boogeyman offing my boys? You expect me to buy that story?
What you believe will become irrelevant in just a few short moments, Mr. Wallace.
Ah, bull. It's just a couple of Esposito's punks hiding in the shadows. But we're on to them, and if they think that Nathan Wallace is going to be had so easily, they're all wet. Come on, O'Donnell. Let's keep moving. O'Donnell! Sweet Jesus! It's real! It's real! And you knew! Aguirre, you knew!
Yes.
But why? Why? It's going to kill you too!
I was dead no matter what I would have done. You would have seen to that once I gave you what you wanted. But I needed to settle my father's debt before I join him. And soon, very soon, it will be settled.
You are crazy. I'm not going to just stand here and let that thing get me. I'm Nathan Wallace. No. No. No!
Now our debt is settled, Mr. Wallace. Aizina duyen guzia omenda. Aizina duyen guzia omenda!
So ends That Which Has a Name by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions. Tonight's radio drama was written especially for Suspense by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Scott Henry was Nathan Wallace. Rocky Cerda was Aguirre. Sean Hackman was O'Donnell. Catherine Kamei was Maggie. Daniel Hackman was Sean, Steve Moulton was Mick, Damon Krall was Doyle, and Dana Perry Hayes was the operator. I'm Damon Krall. Next week at this time, tune in again for another study in Suspense.
without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
Crackdown is coming to CITR. Starting August 30th, CITR will be airing the award-winning podcast about Vancouver's overdose crisis, told by drug user activists and supported by research. Crackdown is hosted by celebrated documentarian and longtime drug user Garth Mullins. Catch Crackdown every Friday morning at 8 a.m. here on CITR 101.9 FM.
Countdown for blast off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X minus one.
Tonight, the Mark Clifton story, Star Bright.
Well, it's finally happened. I've known it would for a long time now. That's why I'm writing this, in the hope that you'll understand and not think me mad. Whatever the outcome, I hope you will not judge me too harshly for what I've done or failed to do.
Mr. Holmes. Mr. Holmes!
Come in. Oh, hello, Chief.
I just wanted to let you know, sir, that we're doing everything we can to find the children.
Yes, I'm sure you are.
We've got 300 men out combing the woods for them. The Army base has volunteered another 100 men, and we've sent an all-points bulletin to every police unit in the country.
Fine, fine.
I just wanted to check and make certain our description is accurate. Your little girl, Star, was wearing a blue dress and white sandals, is that right?
That's right.
And she is how old?
Six years old.
And the little howl boy, how old was he?
Seven, I believe, yes. Seven.
Uh-huh, yeah. Thank you. Well, I'll be in touch with you.
Well, that's very good of you, Chief. Oh, by the way,
yes.
Mr. and Mrs. Howell, how are they taking it?
Well, they're pretty upset, naturally. Mr. Howell, he's out with the men searching.
Yes, yes, I know.
And Mrs. Howell's in the car outside.
Ruth is outside? Why didn't she come in?
Well, she said she'd rather not.
Oh, I see.
Do you, Pete?
Well, Mrs. Howell, I thought...
I decided to come in. I'm not going to sit on my feelings any longer.
Now, Mrs. Howell...
No, I have to say this. Pete, Bill and I have been your neighbors for almost a year now. Our children have been almost inseparable.
I know that.
Then how can you just sit here writing letters when they may be lost somewhere or in trouble? Why aren't you out with Bill and the rest of them searching?
I can't. Ruth, I know how you feel. Please try to understand. I intend to help find Bobby and Star, but I must do this first.
Why? What's so important about
Ruth,
it?
Ruth, I'm sorry.
Sorry? Then why don't you act like a man? You're inhuman.
Please.
I don't ever want to see you or speak to you again. Ever.
Perhaps you won't.
What was that, Mr. Holmes?
Nothing. Chief, if you don't mind, I'd like to be alone for a moment.
Okay, Mr. Holmes. I'll keep in touch.
How can I tell them? How can I make them understand? I write this to you because they must be made to understand somehow, but I have to begin at the beginning. I think I first noticed it one evening when Star was 3 years old. I was in my reading chair going over some work. Star was sitting on the floor in the circle of light with her blunt-nosed scissors and scraps of paper. Her long silence made me glance down.
And then we glue this together, put a line here and there.
Star.
Like that.
Star.
Hmm? What is it, Daddy?
Can I see what you've made?
Uh-huh.
Well, well. It's quite a coincidence.
What?
You know what they call a piece of paper joined together with a half twist like this?
Nope.
It's called a Mobius strip.
You mean somebody already made one?
A man named Mobius, mathematician, long time ago.
Did he know you can put a line on it like that so it has one side all joined?
Yes, yes, he did. Someday I'll tell you what it means.
Now do it.
What?
Tell me about a Mobius strip.
Very complicated.
Then read me about it.
Oh, you wouldn't understand, honey.
Read me anyway.
Okay, young lady. But I warn you, it'll be like one of those nonsense rhymes. At least, I hope it will. At 3 years, a child shouldn't have enough functioning intelligence to put together a Mobius strip. I'd known for some time now that Star was an exceptionally bright child. Just how bright, I had no idea. Not until I began to read to her from an advanced physics book, The Theory of the Mobius Strip. To the power of infinity. Now then, are you sufficiently mixed up, young lady?
Daddy, you know what?
What?
You read too slow. You say a word, then I think a long time, then you say another word.
Oh, I see. Just, what would you have me do about it?
Well, teach me to read. Then I can think as quick as I want.
The word is quickly. It's an adverb.
Oh, Daddy, really? You pick on such unimportant things. I want to learn to read.
Okay. When would you like to begin?
Right now. Tonight.
Before she went to bed that evening, my daughter was able to read. In the months that followed, a great deal happened. Some of our friends, like Jim Petrie, have dropped in and been amused to see her on the floor, rapidly turning the pages of an encyclopedia as big as she is. Sit down, Jim.
Oh, thanks.
Star, aren't you going to say hello to Uncle Jim?
Hello. Huh?
I see she's taken to looking at the pictures in the encyclopedia, huh? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yes. Come on in the library, Jim. I'd like to talk to you privately.
Yeah, sure thing.
Bring your drink, huh?
Okay.
I'll shut the door here.
Why all the secrecy?
Sit down. Mm-hmm. Now, Jim, we've been friends, you and I, ever since engineering school.
So?
Neither of us have ever mentioned it, but one of the reasons we were drawn together is because both of us have IQ somewhere up in the genius ratings.
Oh, I think it was more than that.
Well, that played a part. It isn't easy to be exceptional in a world which regards mediocrity as the only behavior above suspicion.
Well, we all have to live with our afflictions. Yours and mine is a quick mind in a dull environment.
What would you do, Jim, if you were a parent as I am, whose wife had died as Eleanor did, and you discovered that your only child was, well, afflicted with a fantastically brilliant mind?
Star? Oh, come on, Pete. Any little girl who's content just to look at the pictures in the encyclopedia.
Jim.
I mean, after
Jim,
all. What?
She wasn't looking at the pictures.
Huh?
She was reading the pages.
What? But she was turning them as fast as humanly possible.
She was reading them.
But
I know. She remembers everything she understands. She not only remembers everything, she understands the concepts. She even gets impatient with.
Well, have you measured her?
Well, I've given her IQ tests, aptitude tests, reaction tables, all the paraphernalia for measure
work. How do you mean?
Tests don't work.
How do you mean?
Well, either the tables are screwy or Star's beyond all measurement.
Pete, are you sure you're not projecting this? I mean, isn't it possible that a few accidental...
Daddy!
Yes, honey.
I got lonely.
Okay, come on in.
Uncle Jim, would you read me a story?
Why don't you read your own story?
Because I'm only three, and three-year-olds can't read.
Conformity. Answer to her affliction by herself. Conformity. She had already learned to conceal it. When Star was four... Break our hearts before we learn that. When Star was 4 years old, according to state law, her mind had developed enough so she could attend nursery school.
Hi, Daddy.
Hi, honey. Did you, like nursery school?
Oh, yes, it was fun.
What'd you learn today?
Not much. I tried to cut out paper dolls, but the scissors kept slipping.
Now, look, Star, don't overdo it. That's as bad as being too quick. The idea is that everybody has to be just about standard average. That's the only thing people will tolerate. It's expected that a little girl of four should know how to cut out paper dolls properly.
Oh, I guess that's the hard...
That's the part I always found...
How much you ought to know.
Yeah. That's the part I always found hard when I was young.
It's really all right. I let one little girl show me how to cut them out, so now she likes me. She just took charge of me and told the other kids they should like me, too. So they did, because she's the leader, even if she is one of the stupids.
What?
The stupids. That's the trouble with you, Daddy. You don't grasp things right away, just because you're only a tween.
A tween? I assume that means an in-between?
That's right. Hmm. You're in between a stupid and a bright.
And you're a bright?
Yes. I made those names up when I was very little.
How little?
Oh, about 6 months old.
The thoughts began to whirl around in my head after that one. A small fear kept growing inside me. How profound was this little imp that was staring up at me? Even as the thought, how much did she understand already? Even as the thought formed, I learned the final horrifying fact about my little girl.
It's all right, Daddy. Don't be afraid of me. Figured it out.
Anything like that?
Well, I just figured it out.
Star.
Yes, Daddy?
Now, I want you to answer me honestly when I ask you this next question, will you?
Yes.
Star. Can you read people's minds? Are you a telepath? Well?
Yes, Daddy.
I thought so. You read my mind just now, didn't you?
Yes.
Now, I'd like to know something else.
All right.
Can you teach me to do it?
You're already learning it, Daddy. The trouble is you're so slow you didn't even know you were learning.
Oh, I see.
Daddy?
Yeah?
You know what I wish?
What do you wish?
Well, nothing.
All the same, I knew exactly what she was wishing. She was wishing for a companion whose mind would match her own. You see, I was becoming telepathic. Just a minute. Well, hello.
Is your little girl home?
Yes, she's upstairs. Who are you?
I'm Robert.
Robert who?
Robert Howell. My mother and father moved next door yesterday.
Oh, well, come in, Robert.
I'd like to play with your little girl.
How'd you know I had a little girl?
Oh, I just know.
I see. And how old are you?
I'm six.
Well, I'll ask Star to come downstairs. I'm sure she'll be glad to see you.
Yes, she will.
Tell me, Robert, are you a tween or a bride?
Oh, I'm a... What did you say, Mr. Holmes?
Nothing. I didn't have to say it. I could read his thought. He was a bright, and it was no accident that he and his parents had moved next door. Somehow, Star had managed to make contact with him, and they had arranged the whole thing. A father is prepared to lose his daughter eventually, but not so soon, not so terribly soon. They're coming. Oh, hello, Ruth. Something wrong?
Well, I was just looking for Bobby. I thought he was over here playing with Star.
But I thought they were over at your place.
I don't understand it.
I've noticed that they've been disappearing for a couple of hours almost every afternoon.
Well, I suppose they'll turn up again. They know better than to cross the street by themselves. They're too little for that. If they come here first, tell them to come over and have some milk and cookies.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Oh, by the way, this must belong to your star.
Oh, what's that?
Oh, some sort of coin or medal or something. I found it out in the backyard after Star and Bobby were playing. It looks brand new.
Let's have a look.
Oh, is something wrong?
Did you say you found this in your backyard?
Yes. What is it?
I don't know.
Well, I've got to get back. Bill will be getting home for dinner soon, so see you later.
Yes.
Hello?
Jim?
Yes.
Do you have a portable spectrophotometer?
Well, sure. We've got a dozen here at the lab.
Pack one up and get over here right away, will you?
Well, Pete, I don't quit till 5.
Look, do as I say, huh? It's important.
Well, okay.
Uh-huh. Well?
Let me check the amount of radioactivity again.
You've checked it 4 times.
That's about it.
Okay. What's your opinion of this coin?
Well, first of all, let me say this. It's the real McCoy.
And?
Also, it doesn't exist.
Makes sense.
Look, Pete, that coin is pre-Egyptian. It's hand-cast. It's made out of one of the oldest bronze alloys, one that was lost 4,000 years ago.
So it's 4,000 years old.
It is, and it isn't.
What do you mean?
Listen, Pete, old coins show wear. The edges get rounded with handling. The surface oxidizes. The molecular structure changes, crystallizes. Pete, this coin is authentic, and yet it's brand new. It might have been struck off yesterday.
You realize, of course, that that's impossible.
Where'd you get it, Pete?
I don't know. I think the kid's got it.
Star?
Yes.
How?
I don't know. I'm almost afraid to think.
Well, why not ask her?
She isn't around. She and Robert are off playing somewhere.
Well, do you know where?
No, I... Oh, Jim, it's just too fantastic. It isn't possible.
I haven't said a word.
I know what you're thinking.
As a matter of fact, I was thinking something fantastic. How did you guess?
I just guessed. Jim, let's find those kids right now.
Okay.
Star! Robert! Let's try the playroom. Star! Robert! Not in here. Let's try back here.
I hear something. Pete, it's coming from the room we were just in.
That's impossible. There's no place they could have hidden.
I'm going to open that door.
Peek-a-boo, Uncle Jim!
There they were, in the middle of the playroom, holding hands, a little shamefaced, a little defiant. Star, Robert, where have you been? Now, I know you weren't in this room a few seconds ago, and there are no windows you could get through. Well?
It's nothing, Daddy. We just went a little way.
That is not answering me. Where did you go?
You see, Star, we've found this coin.
Come on.
I shouldn't have to tell. You're both just tweens.
Star, I'm still your daddy. Even brights have feelings about their parents. Now.
I tried to ESP you, Daddy.
Does she mean extrasensory perception?
Yeah.
You just don't ESP good, Daddy. Robert does it very nicely. He can always find me when I hide.
That's because you don't have much imagination.
I do, too.
Yeah, but you always have to look at a book to ESP what's in it so you leave an ESP smudge. I just look at where you left the smudge, and I go to that place, and that time, there you are.
Oh, but that's cheating.
It isn't. You just haven't got imagination. You can't teleport yourself to a place that hasn't been.
I can, too. What about the moon people? They haven't been yet.
Oh, Star, they have, too. Not for your daddy, they haven't, but for the things from our tours. The moon people were about 10 million light years ago.
Now, wait a minute, kids. Hold on. Jim, have you been listening to this?
I think I heard it.
Now, look, kids. You're either playing a big joke on us older folks, or you've actually figured out a way to travel to places in the past. Right?
And in the future, too, Daddy.
Star, could you tell us how you do it?
It would be easier if I could ESP it to you.
Well, just pretend we're stupid and tell us in words.
Well, you remember the Mobius strip?
I remember. She made it about a year ago, Jim.
Well, you join the ends of a strip of paper with a half twist to make one surface. Then you take a sheet and give it a half twist so you can join the edges together all over.
That's Klein's bottle.
I don't know about that.
Yes, we know that. Go on.
Well, then you take a cube. You imagine a cube, and you twist it.
Tesseract? Shh. Go on, Star.
And you ESP the twisted cube all together the same way you did Klein's bottle. Now, if you do that big enough, all around you, so you're sort of folded into it, you can teleport yourself any place you want to go. And that's all there is to it.
Jim, what do you think?
I need another drink, Pete. A big one.
That's all there was to it. The line, the plane, the cube, those were Euclidean physics. The Mobius strip, the Klein bottle, the twisted cube, those were Einsteinian physics. Well, I was pretty advanced in both, but I'd have to do some heavy thinking to really grasp it. Meanwhile, the two little kids stood there staring at us.
Star, Robert, can you tell us some of the places you've been?
All over, Uncle Jim. The Romans and the Egyptians and places like that.
Is that how you got the coin?
Uh-huh, I found it. It wasn't stealing, was it, Daddy? I just found it in the dirt.
We'll skip that for a minute. What about going to the future?
There isn't any future, Mr. Holmes.
What's that?
It's kind of hard to explain. Even Star doesn't get it.
Oh.
Well, when she gets to be six, like I am, she'll probably understand.
Well, try to explain it to me.
Well, it's all connected. Just like the Mobius strip. If you go far enough, you'll get back to where it starts again. You start with the cavemen, then us men, then atomic men, the moon men, planet men, star men, and brights. Only somehow...
What?
The brights got off the strip. We haven't been able to find them any place in time.
I'd sure like to know how they got off and where they are.
Now look, kids, this kind of thing can be dangerous. You might be eaten by a dinosaur or something.
Oh, we'd just ESP ourselves right out of there.
Well, anyway, I don't want you leaving this part of the time strip. Not again.
Daddy.
Now, I may be just a tween, but I'm your father.
I always mind you, Daddy.
Yeah? What about going off the block?
But, Daddy, we didn't cross a single street.
Nevertheless...
Pete, think of what you're doing. Pictures, specimens, recordings. Not only from the past, but from the future. Pete, I beg you.
Jim, this is my daughter.
But what a contribution. We could be ages ahead of ourselves.
No. Star. Robert. I'd like your promise you won't leave present time again. Well?
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Now run along. Robert's mother has some cookies and milk for you.
Okay. See you later, Daddy. See you there.
Back with the moon man.
Jim, I'm sorry.
Well, I suppose if I had a daughter...
Are you going to report this?
And have everybody give me the horse laugh? I may be just a tween, Pete, but I'm not an utter fool.
It took me almost 6 months to do it. I don't know how many times I visualized a cube and ESP'd it a half twist and tried to seal the edges around me. And then once there was a flash, just for an instant, I was concentrating on Caesar's triumphant march into Rome. And for the briefest instant, there it was. I was standing on a roadway watching, and then it vanished.
Hey.
Hi, Daddy.
What are you two characters plotting?
Nothing, Daddy.
Well, I'm going to my study for a while. Star?
Yes, Daddy?
You remember your promise about not leaving present time, don't you?
Yes, Daddy.
You're going to keep it?
Yes, Daddy.
Okay. I'm holding you to it. Hello?
Hello, Pete, this is Ruth Howell.
Yeah?
Are the kids there?
No.
When did you see them last?
What time is it? Oh, about 10 this morning, 6 or 7 hours ago. Why?
Oh, Pete, I'm worried.
What's up?
Well, they were upstairs in Bobby's room. I was in the living room. Now, I could swear they didn't come downstairs, and yet, when I went up there, they were gone. That was over 5 hours ago.
Ruth, are you sure they didn't come down?
I was in that living room every moment. Pete, I'm...
Now, Ruth, don't get panicky. I'm coming right over. Just don't get panicky.
Pete!
wasn't a trace of them. Well, that isn't exactly true. Remember what Robert had said about Star leaving an ESP smudge? Well, I was able to catch it in Robert's room. It had something to do with where the brights went when they got off the time strip. That's it, of course. They wouldn't disobey by leaving present time. But isn't it possible that there is more than one present time? Isn't it possible that another now coexists with ours? That's the clue, of course.
I'm going to call the police, Pete.
I don't think it'll do any good.
But we've got to find them. They'd have come back by now.
Yes, if they could.
What do you mean?
Nothing.
Well, what are you going to do?
I'm going back to my study to think.
To think? Aren't you going to look for them?
I have to figure out where to look.
Well, I'm not going to sit around doing nothing. I'm calling the police.
That was this morning. I've been doing some desperate concentrating since then, Jim. I'm writing this down so you'll know. I've already managed to go back to the time of Cheops and ahead to the time when men were navigating to distant planets in a matter of days. But the big job remains. How to get into a dimension parallel with our own at the same time. I figured out that to get the equivalent of a Mobius strip with depth, you must use the supercube, the tesseract. That's what I'm working on at the moment. If I succeed, there is a possibility. I may not be able to get back. I hope you will be able to make Bill and Ruth Howell understand. Okay, now if I take six cubes and fold them in one another so that every angle is a right angle. Yes, all right, I've got that. And now if in folding, I ESP the tesseract, a half twist around myself.
Mr. Holmes. Mr. Holmes, are you in there? Mr. Holmes? We'll have to break in. It's locked from the inside. Mr. Holmes?
Pete! Pete, where are you? Pete?
That's funny. The door was locked from the inside, but here's his fountain pen with the ink still wet. But he's gone.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features the final installment of Frederick Pohl's novel, Slave Ship, story of a world engaged in the wildest of all possible non-wars, where the order of the day was even wilder still. Spare every animal and throw the men to the wolves. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Star Bright, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Mark Clifton and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Sarah Fussell, Lawson Zerbe, Bill Quinn, Billy Harris, Ralph Bell, and Kate Wilkinson. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Next week, a tense and gripping tale from Galaxy, the Ross Rockland story, Jaywalker. Suppose you were the pilot of an interstellar spaceship, and you suddenly discovered a stowaway aboard. And what if that stowaway proved to be your own wife, unknowingly endangering the safety of the ship and the lives of all aboard her? Suppose you had to make the terrible choice between saving your wife or saving the ship. What would you do if that happened to you? You'll hear what one man did next week at X-1. Hear the saga of Mr. Baseball, Connie Mack, on Biography and Sound tonight on NBC Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Monday.
From 1 to 3.
My name's Chris Horrific.
You always wanted his character to be bigger than life.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is, without question, the greatest sports and entertainment event of all time. Be a part of it, Monday.
From 1 to 3 p.m.
the Parts Unknown Show on 101.9 CITR. Sometimes cosmoses collide.
Break your fingers.
And you are tuned into CITR 101.9 FM. Good evening. My name is Brian McDonald, and that is all the time that we have for Scald's Hall. Coming up, we will have a few tunes to round out the evening from all of us here in Vancouver. Have a safe and happy